From Altoona to Lansford, Breezewood to Williamsport, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, yet another state is facing scandal over a proposed bailout of the nuclear power industry. This time, it is Illinois, where an Exelon subsidiary faces scrutiny. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association gets details from Mark Densler of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. And Lebanon County isn't often the epicenter of state politics, but it is ground zero in the fight against Governor Wolf's harsh restrictions on businesses resulting from the COVID-19 pandemic. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to David Taylor and Mark Denzier in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Lower natural gas prices and aging wells have resulted in a dip in impact fee money collected in 2019. Over the past 9 years, natural gas producers have paid over $1.9 billion in impact fees, which have been distributed to counties and municipalities to help compensate local governments for wear and tear on infrastructure stemming from natural gas extraction. According to a report issued by the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy in Pittsburgh, impact fees in 2019 totaled about $200 million. That is $42.6 million lower than in 2018. Not only did prices dip in 2019, but the fees de-escalate as wells age, accounting for a further drop in total impact fees collected. The Commonwealth Foundation has released a new report outlining policy solutions that will help rebuild Pennsylvania's communities in the wake of the COVID-19 crisis. The report outlines long-term solutions in 4 key areas, including K-12 education, healthcare readiness, fiscal health to avoid tax hikes, and jump-starting local businesses. Nathan Benefield of the Commonwealth Foundation noted that even with massive federal stimulus programs, many Pennsylvanians are struggling. He said the report is designed to help lawmakers start to proactively enable state and local communities to safely rebuild. After weeks of saying its draconian policies placing severe limits on bars and restaurants were data-driven, Governor Tom Wolf this past week said the numbers were only a very small part of the decision-making process. Media outlets have been attempting to get the State Department of Health to release the data that supposedly prompted the harsh restrictions, but officials have refused to provide that information. Now the governor has reversed course and claims waiting for the data makes it, quote, too late to take action. Restaurants statewide are currently limited to just 25% of seating capacity. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. A nuclear power industry bailout in Ohio resulted in a bribery scandal and in indictments against top state officials. But the Buckeye State isn't the only state with a nuclear power industry-related bribery scandal. A similar situation has emerged in Illinois. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined today by Mark Densler of the Illinois Manufacturers Association for a Capital Watch discussion. Dave?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. You know, I thought we had a really excellent program last time around talking about the nuke bailout in Ohio and also, of course, here in Pennsylvania, because in both cases, it's the same company, First Energy, that's been involved in that effort to overthrow competitive markets for electricity. And of course, now with the burgeoning scandal in Columbus, we got the scoop on that from our friend Ryan Augsburger at Ohio Manufacturers. Well, I'm so pleased to welcome to the program today my dear friend, my special guest, Mark Densler, President and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association, to talk about Springfield. Mark, thanks for being with us.
David, thank you so much for having me today. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I just wish you could watch the Illinois football team play Penn State this year. But we'll get through this pandemic and hopefully next year.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. From your lips to God's ear. And you know, championship football is one of the many things that our great states share. But, you know, Mark, like me with Pennsylvania Manufacturers, your organization is dedicated to advocating for the people who make things. And obviously, no matter what your, you know, a manufacturing business is making, that they're consuming a lot of energy, and that's why the price point on energy and competitive markets is so important for manufacturers.
You're absolutely right, David. The IMA, very similar to the Pennsylvania Manufacturers, we advocate on behalf of the manufacturing sector. Our background, briefly, we were founded in 1893, the oldest, one of the largest state manufacturing associations in the country, and very good relationship with you and our friends in Ohio. But you're absolutely correct. Outside of personnel costs, energy costs are oftentimes the single greatest cost for any manufacturing company. And there was recently, Department of Energy came out and showed that Illinois, not unsurprisingly, in the Midwest, is the largest consumer of electricity. And within that space, about a third of all energy consumed in Illinois is by the industrial sector. And so energy costs are absolutely a critical point when manufacturers are making decisions about where to invest their capital, where to locate, and where to do expansions.
So we have, you know, in Pennsylvania, we have competitive markets for electricity. We went through a very costly and drawn out transition period, during which time the nuclear power sector was allowed to surcharge the ratepayers to collect an extra $9 billion to compensate them for the value of their assets. And so this is why, one of the reasons why, you know, on the consumer side, that we're so militant about, you know, maintaining competitive markets. Like, you guys lobbied for the nukes, lobbied for this. They were paid handsomely to enter into these competitive markets. And of course, they did it because they thought that they would be the low cost baseload provider. And then, of course, the Marcellus Shale was discovered and natural gas arose. And it looks like the nukes just didn't do anything to prepare for the competitive markets that they said they wanted to enter. And so, you know, we're going to hold a tough line on this, that there's no going back, and that the competitive market is so critical, you know, as Ryan was saying last time around, about driving not only, you know, low cost and reliability, but also the innovation that's going to have that process of continuous improvement that's going to benefit all consumers. So anyway, that's a long way of like reintroducing our audience to the subject. Mark, can you talk about the state of competitive markets in Illinois and what's been going on, I guess, and then leading into what's happening with the scandal involving Exelon?
Sure, and it's a great question, and it goes back, David, actually to 1997. Illinois deregulated its electric market. At that point, we were top 10 when it came to cost for energy, both residents and businesses. Illinois deregulated the market. We're a little bit of a different character because we actually have two grids. The northern half of Illinois is the PJM grid, which I think is 12 or 13 state and kind of goes north and east toward you. And
yes,
then we
sir.
Have the MISO grid, which again is a number of states, which is in the central and southern part of Illinois, and goes down into kind of the Missouri and south of us. And so we have two separate grid operators in Illinois, but we deregulated in 1997. And within a period of time, we became a bottom 10 state in terms of cost. So one of the best economic development things that Illinois General Assemblies or governors have done in decades, and we've done some studies about the importance of that. And we're also blessed here, much like you are in Pennsylvania, we have a very diverse energy sector. We're a net exporter. Our load today is roughly 43% coal, about the same nuclear, and then you throw in some renewables and some natural gas. But the competitive marketplace, and the IMA has done some studies, has really been a substantial advantage, and we've saved billions of dollars over the years and because we've had cheaper energy costs. And the IMA, much, you know, like many other business organizations, we support a competitive electric market. Let competition reign. You know, those that can deliver the best product at the best price should do so. And certainly, if individuals or companies want to buy, for example, 0% emissions, or they have a preferred choice, they can work with their provider to do that. And so 1997, we deregulated. You flash forward to 2007, where some of the environmental groups decided they want to kind of re-regulate the marketplace and create a renewable portfolio standard that mandated the state start buying a set percentage of renewable energy, regardless of cost.
Yeah.
And then you move forward even again to just a couple years ago, and kind of what you referred to initially, Illinois passed what's known as the Future Energy Jobs Act. And that was a piece of legislation that the IMA ultimately opposed. We have a very good relationship here, actually, with our utilities. We work with them on a regular basis. But this was one issue where we diverged, that we support the open and competitive marketplace in the energy legislation a couple years ago. Had a number of different tenets to it. One of those was the nuclear subsidy, where Exelon, which is our provider, got a zero emission credit. Is part of that. And so we have, and it's kind of convoluted, we have a reverse auction process here, David.
Okay.
And the way that works, normally an auction, someone bids in at, say, $50 a megawatt, and then it would go up. Ours goes in reverse order. So different companies bid in what they can sell the power for, and then the auction goes down. And we have a group called the Illinois Power Authority that then buys the energy that's necessary to be transmitted out to the end users. And it just the utilities, nuclear utilities, really struggled, much as you point out, because of the low cost of natural gas. And so they passed the zero emission credit as part of that bill, and then they increased the renewable standard. And again, just started re-regulating the marketplace, and we don't think that's the way to go. The proponents are back, not just utilities, but environmental groups and others, asking for now what's known as the Clean Energy Jobs Plan, where, again, they want to go to a 0% carbon emission by from the electric sector by 2030, 0% emissions by 2050, additional nuclear subsidies. But then we have some other facilities that might be coal burning that are looking to become renewable energy. So there's a whole host of things that are ongoing, probably 7 or 8 different proposals that are all kind of being worked on together. And the governor's hoping to have an announcement this week about what his priorities and goals are. And then they'd like to try to negotiate and get something done by November.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me, our special guest, Mark Densler, president and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. And Mark, just to follow up on some of the things that you said, it also happened to us in Pennsylvania, the introduction of a renewable portfolio standard that was under Governor Rendell. And so there's a carve out for these preferred energy sources that that in Pennsylvania, it tops out at a max of 18% of the market. And, you know, we were not for that, but still at least at 82% competitive. There's still, you know, a lot of strength there for innovation and competition. So I guess this brings us to the story here that's most relevant to the situation in Pennsylvania. So it was in late 2018, early 2019, that the nuclear power industry came to Harrisburg in pursuit of a bailout, in pursuit of overturning competitive markets and compelling people to they wanted to carve out of the market of it was like over 50%, and it would have been the death of competition. And the hostage that they were threatening to shoot was Three Mile Island, which subsequently, you know, has been shut down and is no longer in operation. But that Exelon was the owner of Three Mile Island, and along with First Energy, that they were extremely active and that they spent historic amounts of money on lobbying, even though they ultimately were not successful. But Exelon, that there's been scandal in Springfield involving Speaker Madigan. And I was just wondering if you could share like the broad view of what's happening with Exelon and ComEd and the speaker.
Sure. And so what's happened in Illinois when Exelon years ago, they had to divest from ComEd. And so there is a relationship, but Exelon being on the generation side, Commonwealth Edison is a transmission company, And so Commonwealth Edison is, again, in the PJM, the northern half of Illinois, and Ameren, Illinois is in the central and southern part of the state. And there's been an investigation by federal officials with regard to ComEd's lobbying practices over the years. They've gone back about a decade, and they've really identified three or four individuals that were in the company or contractual lobbyists, no longer are with the company or in any way represent them. But Commonwealth Edison, a couple weeks ago, actually entered into an agreement with the courts for a deferred prosecution and admitted to essentially a bribery scheme with those individuals, and they have been fined $200 million.
Wow.
That technically is on hold because there's some belief that that money should be, the restitution should go to ratepayers as opposed to the government.
Right.
But it's a 3-year deferred prosecution. So if they don't uphold their end of the bargain in terms of, you know, working with the federal government, then potentially they could be charged in court with bribery. But the tentacles are ongoing. Like I said, there's three or four individuals that have been tied up into that. And part of the allegation is that our Speaker of the House, Michael Madigan, who is the longest-serving speaker in United States history, first was sworn into office in 1971, and he's been speaker for nearly 40 years.
Wow.
But the allegation that has been made in Illinois and what the feds have worked with ComEd on is that they kind of created this enterprise whereby, you know, that utility company in the time, these three or four individuals came up with a scheme, essentially, that involved, you know, hiring some friends and campaign contributions and a number of different things. And so that has certainly cast a stain on the speaker, certainly cast a stain on the current ongoing energy negotiations that the governor's office is trying to lead. And, you know, kind of served as a wake-up call for a lot of us that are involved in this business.
We just want that ongoing process of market competition to drive innovation, to drive efficiency, to hammer down costs, which, you know, in turn, it's a massive anti-poverty program. Low-income people especially pay a larger percentage of their family budgets on power. And so, you know, low prices, consistent prices, it's helpful to them in the same way that it's helpful for, you know, your large industrial type energy consumers. So,
yeah, you're absolutely right. And I mean, nuclear is an important part of our portfolio here. I mean, particularly when we've had polar vortexes, nuclear energy operates at great efficiency. And you know, but again, last Friday, I was on a call with the Wind Energy Association, giving an award to a member of Congress. You know, we have a lot of folks that make products for the wind energy. But again, it should be that competition. Let them compete fairly on a level playing field. Government shouldn't pick winners and losers. Every company or individual can make the decision. If they want solar, for example, or they want, you know, geothermal, they can do that, or they
yes.
can procure energy, but let the marketplace work. And again, we don't pick winners and losers. We work with everybody. We have members that make parts for hydro or for wind or for solar. Those are all important parts of the energy portfolio, and we support an all-of-the-above approach.
Yes, sir.
But let the marketplace work, and you're exactly right. I mean, nobody, you know, in the 1970s, they thought our supply of oil was gone.
And, yes.
And the amazing technology, you're right, of hydraulic fracturing and what that has meant for our country and energy independence. You know, the leading producer of oil and natural gas in the world right now, surpassing Saudi Arabia and Russia. And so it is amazing technological advancement from the manufacturing sector in the United States that has led to, you know, cheap gas. We used to pay $4 a gallon. It's $2 a gallon now. And mm-hmm. But as you said from the outset, David, it is so important, energy costs for manufacturers. But we need energy sources that are efficient, that are stable, that are low cost. And I will say, I mean, Commonwealth Edison has done a very good job here on a rate formula, for example, where they've really advanced their grid. And when there is a blackout or a brownout caused by a storm, they are much faster getting that fixed with that technology. And
yes.
So, again, they had a situation here. It's very unfortunate, you know, what it's resulted in. But, you know, hopefully moving forward, things will change and we'll continue our great partnership with them because they are an important part of the energy sector.
Yeah, absolutely. And we, and you know, and again, with, same with these great Pennsylvania institutions, we want everybody to play their part with, you know, on the generation side, with cranking out the electrons, and with the distributors being able to deliver to customers for reliability and strengthening the grid. I continue to be concerned about infrastructure from a, you know, not just a reliability view, but also for a public safety, national security view. We've coasted on the accomplishments of previous generations for too long, and our failure to continue to go back and to revamp, to service, to upgrade and expand our infrastructure, I think is a net negative. It's a net drag on overall U.S. competitiveness. So hopefully that's one of the issues that our respective states and Congress can get together to work on in the coming months and years. So we're actually winding down here, Mark, for the time that we had available. And again, I'm so grateful to get to spend time with you and to have the viewers hear the benefit of your insights. Where can the listeners go to learn more about you and your organization and the work that you're doing?
Thanks, David. And again, thank you for everything that you and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association are doing every day for the manufacturing sector. I'll just say very briefly that, the worst global economic and health challenge in our crisis, and manufacturers are once again answering the nation's call, leading the way forward. So I'm proud, as you are, to represent them. But for more information about the IMA, it's www.ima-net.org.
Outstanding. My pal, Mark Densler. As ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on Sunday mornings at 8:30 on the Pennsylvania Cable Network with PMA Perspective. So for Mark and me, thanks to all of you for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Outside of South Central Pennsylvania, many residents of Penns Woods might have difficulty locating Lebanon County on a map. Situated between Hershey and Redding, the county of 142,000 people boasts an abundance of bucolic farmland, a small, diverse county seat, and the quaint enclave of Mount Gretna. Lebanon County is one of the brightest red counties in the state. The GOP dominates every office from Congress to dog catcher. Republicans there are of the Ronald Reagan variety and are possessed of the independent streak exhibited by our forefathers who gathered a few miles away in 1776 to declare a new nation. Rarely does Lebanon County play a major role in statewide politics, but in this year of coronavirus, it has become ground zero in the battle against the draconian policies of the Wolf administration. And that resistance has in turn brought out the worst of the governor's penchant for petulant political payback. The battle lines were drawn as the state moved through its childish red, yellow, green phases of reopening following the harsh lockdown policies that had been implemented by Wolf and Secretary of Health Dr. Rachel Levine. The fuzzy metrics and constantly changing benchmarks used by the state to determine which counties advanced into less restrictive phases fueled mounting frustration among county officials across the Commonwealth. A boiling point was reached in mid-May, and a number of counties announced they would move into the less restrictive phases on their own, regardless of state policy. This prompted a gubernatorial temper tantrum, followed by threats to withhold state funding from any county that defied his orders. While most counties retreated following the governor's diatribe, Lebanon County stood strong. Its Republican commissioners, along with the backing of the county's legislative delegation, moved forward into the green phase in defiance of the governor's orders. Wolf fired back, calling all of the above cowards, claimed they were enabling the spread of the virus by moving forward with reopening too soon. In an act of incredible hypocrisy, and in violation of his own orders, placing strict limits on in-person gatherings, the governor then joined thousands of protesters in Black Lives Matter marches. Lebanon County continued to rebel. Its legislators were prime movers behind the General Assembly's passage of a resolution to end the governor's emergency powers. That resolution passed, only to be declared unconstitutional by the labor union-dominated state Supreme Court. Representatives Frank Ryan and Russ Diamond then joined in co-sponsoring articles of impeachment against the governor. Citizens joined in the fray. A local diner and a small Italian restaurant known as Taste of Sicily reopened early at full capacity. Elected officials, including the county's congressman, state senator, state representatives, and commissioners, converged on the eating establishments to lend their support. Then it was time for political payback. Wolf announced he would withhold $12.8 million in federal CARES Act funding from Lebanon County because they did not follow the rules. That prompted both a lawsuit from the Lebanon County commissioners and a legislative resolution demanding the county be given its funding. After leaving Lebanon County twisting in the wind for a few weeks, the Wolf administration agreed to a settlement. But there was a price to pay. The county would be required to spend $2.8 million on an educational campaign to get citizens to wear masks. That amounts to spending $20 for every man, woman, and child in the county on a mask campaign that will have little or no impact. In opposing the settlement, County Commissioner William Ames said, quote, "The governor's insistence on these conditions is one more example of his petty politics and his callous disregard of the true needs of Pennsylvania's citizens," end quote. He added sarcastically, "I'm sure his decision was based on science." There is good reason for Ames' sarcasm, as the Wolf administration's COVID-19 policies have had little to do with science and everything to do with petty politics. And while the governor insists on wasting $2.8 million in federal funding to assuage his ego rather than actually fight the virus because Lebanon County did not follow the rules, he and his administration continue to flaunt both the rules and the actual law. The Department of Health is fighting right-to-know requests for the data used to determine its policies and has ignored a subpoena issued months ago by the state Senate for information on its bungled waiver program for essential businesses. For Tom Wolf, it's do as I say, not as I do. Much like their forefathers at Independence Hall stood in defiance of another tyrannical regime, Lebanon is one county that's not about to be deprived of its right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 25 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WPGM-FM in Danville, WCED-AM in Dubois, along with WWEC-FM in Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. We'll be right back.